Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Global Data Pod dealing with the EM Edge space. Recall that EM Edge for us in JP Morgan covers frontier economies plus six GC countries. I'm Nicolae Alexandru, and today I have with me Bolahan Taiwo, who is the chief economist for Africa Edge. So that's basically North Africa, Sub-Saharan Africa, excluding South Africa. Bolahan, we've covered in the EM Edge Data Watch various topics, but one that we covered again a few weeks ago was about the interest burden in frontier economies. And what we showed is that there is a significant increase in that interest burden expressed as interest revenues, particularly in the case of economies in Africa and Asia, Edge, and that materialized over the past decade. Clearly, higher interest rates have contributed this increase in the interest burden, but that's not the only thing. There was also a significant increase in the debt stock. What this kind of has done was to force governments to implement measures to stabilize their dynamics, to reduce budget deficits. And obviously these measures had some consequences, like negative impact on economic activity. So maybe we can start us off with you giving us a bit of context. Which countries have been affected the most in Africa space, and why some were impacted more than others?
Cool. No, thanks. Thanks, Nicolae. I mean, I think some backdrop is some of the things you have mentioned as well, right? So I think that what you have seen is a large increase in debt, particularly domestic debt, in the last, say, 3-4 years for a number of these economies. And that basically came on the back of, as you all know, global tightening, the borrowing at commercial levels externally became a lot more expensive. They still had relatively large fiscal deficits, particularly on the interest side because of the stock of debt. So rollover needs were high. So what you then saw was an increased level of interest rate on the back of domestic tightening as well. One thing that has been a common thread across most of these economies is an inflation acceleration over the past few years, both via domestic and international factors. And what we have seen in the region is, you know, perhaps the most accelerated pace of monetary tightening on record. So what that did, the combination of all of that meant that, you know, even borrowing domestically, even though the liquidity was available, it was at a more expensive rate. So, and because authorities did not want to lock in higher rates in the longer end of the curve, a lot of these debts were short term, usually 1 year and below. So again, rollover risks were high. So in that instance, you saw interest expense accelerate for a number of the countries. The ones that could borrow externally were able to do so, but did that at an expensive rate, and that as well caused the issues there. In terms of countries that were affected the most here that you talked about, I mean, Egypt is one of them. You know, the stock of the domestic debt in Egypt is high. You know, 90% of total interest expenses is from domestic alone. So that is significant. Ghana as well was largely impacted. Ghana has now, in fact, undergone a domestic debt operation. So if you see Ghana compared to at least other regions, you are now starting to see some decline in terms of interest to revenue because they've started to use the pressures there. Zambia is another one as well. Even though they haven't undergone a domestic debt operation, they are undergoing an external debt operation, and they've seized interest payment, and that as well is helping. But generally across board, you've seen, you know, similar fate fall across most of these economies. And they are trying to
Is there more improvement in, sorry to interrupt you, but is there more improvement in Ghana's debt to GDP dynamics and interest burden than in the case of Zambia, given that they are doing operations on both domestic and external?
That's correct. Yeah, so we've seen a significant improvement in Ghana's debt dynamics as well. So Ghana was looking at something above 80-85% of debt to GDP ratio in 2021, 2022, and now they're just under 80%, around 76%, because of the debt operation that they've done. I mean, FX has helped a bit as well in terms of stability there. But yeah, Ghana has been much improved. Zambia is still at elevated levels because, you know, they didn't do a domestic debt operation, and they still haven't concluded the external debt. So we're still talking closer to 100% debt to GDP ratio there.
Okay, thanks for offering the framework, Bolohan. And now let's go to, let's say, the latest developments, and the one which are probably more interesting. I mean, the way we titled you know, the podcast, the story you have missed. If we look at headline budget balances, right, Africa screens as pretty bad relative to other countries because budget balances are rather wide in the region, and for the aggregate as well, it's quite wide relative to other parts of the frontier. It's worth saying that probably we've had the widening in fiscal balances across EM and DM, right? So from that point of view, it's not necessarily bad what we are seeing in Africa, but pointed out like various issues in kind of funding themselves and the higher interest rate costs. Government have done something, right? And this is what I wanted to talk to you about, right? And what have they done is action on the primary balances. At least when I looked at the data, I was somewhat surprised because there's been a trend of improvement in primary balances in Africa for an extended period of time, almost a decade. There was a brief pause during COVID, right? But the trend is there.
Yeah.
So what is behind this trend? What are the various governments in various countries doing? And where do you think this is heading?
Yeah, I mean, technically, I mean, a number of factors. I mean, and I think I agree with you that it perhaps is something that a lot of us missed, and perhaps underappreciated, even in the investor community. The significant improvement that we've seen across the region for primary balances. And there are a number of factors to it. I mean, I think one key one is the IMF programs. A good number of the SSA economies are now on an IMF program, and that would definitely that has pushed them on a reform path. So the IMF is pushing them to, you know, revenue-led fiscal consolidation. So in a number of economies, we have seen tax policy adjustments. Some have had to increase taxes. Ghana too, Nigeria had to increase taxes as well, VAT. And in other times as well, they've had to be forced to ration expenditure. So basically, you know, non-useful expenditure, if you can call it that. One of the things that they have tried to do is to keep the capex contribution, to be able to ensure that at least growth and potential growth still remains. But still, as we alluded to at the beginning, you know, growth has still slowed in a number of these economies because of the tighter economic policy. So the IMF is a big factor. They're pushing a number of these countries on reforms, and that's positive. You know, there was a note that you did as well, Nico. I think it was last month, talking about the IMF involvement in Africa. And an interesting number there is that, you know, we've now seen lending to Africa, it has risen more than four times, from about 7.5 billion as at the end of 2018 to somewhere around 36 billion as at the end of 2023. So again, that's a significant amount of support there, you know, some were RFI, but, you know, even post 2021, we've seen quite an increase as well. So that's one. I mean, the other thing is that, you know, a number of the economies depend on commodities. So commodity prices have been supportive as well to help, you know, Angola is one, Nigeria is one, Zambia, you're talking copper as well, and in some other parts of SSA as well, that has been supportive. So that was that has helped again to push revenues higher, and that has also helped in narrowing, if you like, the primary balances, or improve the primary balances in a number of economies. What's the outlook going forward? I mean, I think I'll talk about the outlook and I'll talk about the risk. I mean, the risk first is that, you have IMF programs that probably will start ending from 25, 26. And then there's a risk that some of the authorities in this region will revert back to their old ways and you start losing some of the gains. I mean, I don't think, I mean, I think why that is a risk, I think one other trend I would like to point out here is that in a number of countries over the past few years, we've seen new governments come in, and those governments have seemed quite reformist. We saw that in Zambia, we saw that in Kenya, we've seen that in Nigeria now. Ghana is going to the polls later this year as well. That happened. Cote d'Ivoire is going to the polls. Senegal went to the polls this year as well. So it seems we have seen a wave of reformist governments coming into power in the region, and it seems that that trend, I mean, if I'm to take a bet, likely might continue, and you continue to see, improvements in primary balances with revenue-led fiscal consolidation reforms coming through there. What
So,
would
is that a large part of population vote for the reformist government, kind of knowing that this is going to imply, let's say, less expenditure, higher taxation, basically what you're saying? So, what you're saying is that large parts of population in certain countries in Africa accept this.
Yes, in fact they do, yeah, and it's more born from the fact that they feel they there's the feeling that the way the old guard has been they've been doing things is not the right way. They want younger and government or authorities with fresher ideas that would deliver this meaningful growth and development to the economy that would ultimately be beneficial for them in the medium to long term. So that is the idea. So and one factor is that now, and I think to that point, Nico, is that I think the COVID-19 pandemic also, I think, awakened a lot of the younger population in Africa in terms of going to the vote. I mean, a lot of the governments could not support them in very meaningful way, and I think there's a revolt now.
I'm going to deviate a little bit from the main topic that we
Okay.
had today, but I need to ask you this. I mean, based on what you said, I mean, how do you compare then the trends in the countries that you mentioned against countries in Sahel, where we've seen, let's say, a bit of a different type of
Yeah.
political development? So, I mean, what's kind of the main difference between the two?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think, we cannot downplay the fact that we still have insecurity situation in some parts of the region, particularly as you alluded to in the Sahel. So, as we have seen reformist governments, we've seen a number of coups as well in the region, which many could argue could be very disruptive as well. I mean, from a medium-term perspective. But again, another argument to that, Nico, is that some of these coups were also born out of the frustration of the people. And you find now a lot of these countries that have transitioned governments that are still led by the military, but they are actually trying to reform. You have cases in Gabon where you're seeing a transition government, for instance, that is trying to deliver IMF type, fiscal consolidation efforts as well. So I think whilst on the headline, coups tend not to be good in the region, but some of the population in these countries and were not particularly opposed to this happening because they felt it was not exactly the bad outcome given the circumstances. But the quicker they return to a democratic rule, I think the better it will be for the region, the more they can, go to, again, to the likes of the IMF and get more support and get more programs and get more international support, to help them along the way.
So yeah, from what you're saying, international support is a big driver of the positive developments in the region, particularly on the fiscal side. And like, if I understood well your arguments, at least for some time, because the programs are ongoing, right? it's likely that these improvements in primary balances are likely to continue. I mean, the region, at least Africa Edge, the way we define it, was already recording a primary surplus in 2023. And it's probable that that surplus is going to increase even more this year. But the region has had surpluses, the primary balances, prior to global financial crisis, even larger than what we're seeing now, right? In the range of 1 to 2%. Can we go back there? Is there a risk of a reversal? You kind of alluded to some risk of a reversal once the programs end, but you're also talking about a new generation of politicians potentially, right? So, and population who wants reforms. So maybe it's more sustainable than just relying on the IMF.
No, it is, and I think yes, we can go back there. But you know, in addition to a number of things that I already mentioned, you know, reformist government, international support, I think a couple of things I'll add that would support is, you know, a lot of the economies in SSA are very commodity dependent. I think we need to start seeing more diversification. And you know, for you to start to diversify meaningfully, you need investment. So. And then for you to get investment, you need domestic policies to attract, sound domestic policies to attract those investments. So I think if this reformist government, as we're saying, start to go in that direction, I'm positive that we can get back to, you know, sort of the 2-3% levels pre-GFC that we saw in terms of primary deficit. I think ultimately that will be positive. Well, the other part is, you know, you just need commodity prices as well. To stay high enough at this at decent levels for this to be sustained. Otherwise, you know, because they're very dependent on it, there might be quick reversals. But otherwise, they can do it.
Yeah. So let's hope for a combination of reforms, IMF support, but also support from global commodities prices. Yeah. That would continue to lead to even more positive stories out of Africa. Thank you for the discussion today, Bolohan, and thank you to our listeners who joined us.